James Corbett, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you again for having me. Always a pleasure to be here.
What do you think of those remarks by Sidney Lord Monckton?
Well, unfortunately, it's very much on the mark, and there's so many different signs that we could point to about this. In fact, one of the most recent coming out of a report from Bloomberg noting that Detroit is on track to completely run out of cash next month and won't be able to cover its long-term debt or retiree obligations. So just another data point on that bigger map that's being put on the table right now. But I think
that is the city of Detroit you're speaking of now.
Yes, that's right. Detroit, Michigan. And that's, of course, only one municipality out of the many, many that are similarly either strapped for cash or are already teetering on that edge of bankruptcy. And it's just a small sign of what's happening on the larger macroeconomic scale, obviously. And unfortunately, there are so many different data points along that that trend, but they all add up to about the same thing, which is, of course, the type of economic calamity that we've been talking about here for a long time is still shaping up. But I think that there's even more compelling pieces of data to be looking at involving some of the scandals that have emerged in the past few days regarding the IRS and the Justice Department in the United States that does not bode well, I think, for the overall American people, certainly, as it really does point to a complete deterioration of the last vestiges that there is a rule of law in the United States.
And of course, basically, you're talking about the fact that the IRS has been targeting certainly conservative groups, and basically because the excuse as well was just some of the bureaucrats, they were overindulgent, had nothing to do with the political appointees. Yes, they did target certainly political organizations and conservative non-taxable organizations, but they were not going to do anything about it. We just made a mistake. Why don't they fire the people? They're not going to fire them. They're going to promote them. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is James Corbett. And certainly James writes a regular weekly or bi-weekly articles for the International Forecaster and is filling in for our good friend Bob Chapman, who's passed away. And certainly James is talking about some of the scandals that have come out this last week. One of those, of course, was pointing out the IRS now has admitted that they've targeted groups, of course, that disagree with the current administration. Now, they're not supposed to do that. That's a violation of the law. It's a criminal act. But of course, they've been doing it, and now they've had to admit it. And but they say, well, it really was just poor judgment. Well, basically, ladies and gentlemen, they can target anyone they want to and say it's just poor judgment. Is anybody ever punished? Well, of course not. After all, they're federal employees. They're above the law. Well, James, let's talk about these various crises, these various certainly things that are coming up that show that we no longer have a government of law. We have a government of force. It's going to be used to target individuals and destroy anyone who stands in the way of the move to the dictatorship. Go right ahead.
Well, unfortunately, you're exactly right in that assessment, and I think this is something that you and I and others have been talking about for a long time, but it's really coming to a head, or seemingly so at this point, when we start looking at things like this latest IRS scandal. And for those who haven't been following it, basically this is related to the application for tax exemption of various groups that are looking for 501c4 tax exemptions. That's social welfare groups. And this really took off after the Citizens United decision back in January 2010. They had a flood of groups applying for this 501c4 tax exemption. And so apparently there was a special unit of the IRS based in Cincinnati that was assigned to screen these 501c4 applications. And someone, somehow, we haven't quite figured out how yet, decided that they would screen all applications for anything containing the words Tea Party or Patriots. And if that was found, those applications would get the special treatment. And some of the special treatment that was requested of some of these organizations was flat out ridiculous, including wanting to know the home address and phone numbers of every person who has ever attended any one of the meetings ever put on by the groups, asking for the home address and contact numbers for family members of board members of the groups, etc., etc. Just ridiculous 100-page questionnaires being mailed out to many of these groups that were being targeted for special scrutiny by the IRS. And now that this has come to light, it looks like we're going to get a special hearing on this coming up on the 17th of May that's going to start some investigation into what went on. But unfortunately, like yourself, I'm a bit skeptical as to whether we're really going to learn anything of great import here, or whether anyone's really going to be have their feet held to the fire for this.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and James is simply saying that there's a special division of the IRS that deals with 501c4 tax status. And, of course, basically, of course, there's somebody in the IRS decided they would target anyone who is conservative, associated with the Tea Party, or had to do with patriotism or liberty, and they would make their lives miserable. Now, this is a violation of the law. But do you honestly think that anybody's going to be punished for violating the law? Because we have a government that doesn't abide by laws, that it makes its own laws, and unfortunately is no longer responsible to the people. Why? Because we have electronic voting machines, and every one of them could be fixed, ladies and gentlemen. We have the facade of representative government, but not the reality of representative government. Go right ahead, James.
Well, this is exactly the point. What we've been laboring under for decades now, I would say, is the illusion that there is a rule of law in the United States. And I think people like yourself have been pointing out quite amply over the past few decades how that is just an illusion. But at any rate, the veneer was there. But it seems that this veneer of some sort of rule of law is finally being stripped away, and the system is just being exposed for what it is. And it's really a question of how people will react to this. And just to put this IRS scandal in perspective, we should keep in mind that one of the articles of impeachment of Nixon back during the impeachment proceedings against him were getting underway was that he was using the IRS to target to tax audit basically his political enemies. And somehow, four decades ago, it was immediately understood just how wrong that was and how that was an absolute flagrant abuse of political power that should not be allowed to stand. And now here we are in 2013, and it's a question of whether or not the same type of ire and outrage will be applied in this scandal, and whether or not this will just be shunted off into some bureaucrats in the Cincinnati office of the IRS and basically blamed on them. Of course, as we know, in any properly managed system, the people who are in charge of the division or the department should be the ones who are held accountable for what happens under their command, no matter whether or not they actively participated in it or not. But of course, it would be extremely surprising if anyone higher up in the chain of command of the IRS or even the White House ever took any serious hit for this. Again, the proof will be in the pudding, but I hope people will at least be watching this scandal unfold to really understand just how far down that ladder towards outright tyranny we've fallen, and just how little outrage there is now from, of course, the political left, who feel that there's nothing wrong with a Democrat administration targeting the people on the political right.
But, of course, the trouble was under Richard Nixon, why the Republicans didn't think there was anything wrong with what Richard Nixon was doing either. So, basically, it's bilateral corruption. That's the big problem we have. Bilateral corruption.
That's exactly right. And in fact, that's something that I'm working on a video report right now on exactly those lines, talking about how the left-right system is used to suppress any true dissent against the system itself, which is absolutely oppressive. It is outright tyrannical. But if they can just get people to focus on whether or not this was a Democrat or a Republican, they can get people to avoid the bigger issues. And I always go back to a quote from Carol Quigley, of course, the Georgetown historian who wrote Tragedy and Hope, published back in 1966. And he wrote about the left-right system. He wrote, quote, "The argument that the two parties should represent opposed ideals and policies, one perhaps of the right and the other of the left, is a foolish idea acceptable only to the doctrinaire and academic thinkers. Instead, the two parties should be almost identical so that the American people can throw the rascals out at any election without leading to any profound or extreme shifts in policy."
And I love that quotation. That's page 1246 or 1247. I can't remember, but that is such a vitally important statistic and a statement. If you don't have the book, you need to get it and read that. He was a man, he was totally in sympathy with this elite who run our country. He just thought that because he was a historian, people had a right to understand who was running things and what their ultimate goal was and how wonderful it was going to be when these educated idealists were able to bring about their world government, which was their real goal. But go right ahead.
Well, you're exactly right about that. And I always like to point out when talking about Carroll Quigley, for those out there who are hearing about him for the first time and think he might be some sort of fringe thinker, that he was, in fact, a mentor to Bill Clinton and was name-checked when Bill Clinton received the Democratic presidential nomination back in 1992 as one of his mentors and one of his leading guiding lights in his life. So this is someone who has had a profound effect on American politics and who was one of the few that was allowed into the secret repository of records of the CFR to find out where that group really came from, where it really, what it was really aimed at, and how it's really functioning. And he laid it all out there in Tragedy and Hope, the Anglo-American Establishment, and his other works. And that has been more or less covered up. In fact, the original plates of the original printing of Tragedy and Hope were destroyed by the publisher before another copy could be made, another printing. So our original edition is extremely difficult to find, but it is all laid out there, and I hope people will look into that, because again, it's just one of the aspects of what he laid out there, is that the left-right's fraud is completely a fraud. The idea of Republicans and Democrats as two opposed parties is really just something that's put out there for the general public to basically sop up their anger so that Democrats can overlook the sins of the Democrat administrations and the Republicans can overlook the sins of the Republicans, and no progress can be made towards establishing true liberty in a country that was once the beacon of freedom throughout the world.
We do carry the book, actually. Of course, I actually went back to Georgetown and spent a week there on several occasions. I talked to Professor Quigley's widow. I talked to his mistress. I talked to his secretary. I talked to his best friend. I went through his papers. We got them. Actually, we were able to copy them before anybody had gone through them and shredded them. So we have certainly all of those things. Of course, for the people on the intelligence agents who are listening, I want you to know we made multiple copies. We sent them out to other people across America. So that certainly we are not the only source of the original documentation of what Professor Quigley talked about, but of course what James says is absolutely right. And he exposed the secret organization, and believe me, it was formed as a secret society. It still exists today as a semi-secret society, and basically behind everything going on today, everything is planned. They know exactly what they're doing, but the fascinating thing about what's going on today is that these people are worried. In fact, just last week, Richard Haass, chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations and a member of the Trilateral Commission, wrote an article in Time magazine saying, we are in real trouble financially. We've got to start pulling our patients, our troops home. And I sort of didn't know whether he was pulling our leg or not. This week, Zbigniew Brzezinski writes an article for Time magazine that says exactly the same thing. The last thing we want to do is get involved in Syria right now because it could create real problems for us. They understand, certainly Richard Haass laid it out very clearly last week, we are on the verge of a financial Armageddon. We've got to get our financial house in order. Why is he concerned about that? Because they want to be able to use the financial and military power of the United States to bring about their world government, and they're afraid it's going to collapse. I really think they are afraid of it. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think there really is the possibility of a collapse of what they've been so carefully setting up for generations now, if they do overextend themselves at this period. And I think people like Brzezinski, unfortunately, he's not really on our side, even when he argues against Syrian intervention. I think really he just wants a more Machiavellian strategy of keeping that strategy of tension going in places like Syria, because that that creates that balance of power in a region where I think one of the strategic objectives might be to keep the entire region in chaos so that no one power can arise as the dominant regional player. It's the old divide and conquer imperial strategy, and I think that's more what Brzezinski has in mind, rather than attempting to, in a more neocon vein, go in and just bomb the smithereens out of the country and take over Syria. So there's really just different management arms competing for control of the New World Order system at this point. But I think there really is that possibility that they can overextend, overcook the overbake the pie, as it were, that they're trying to create right here. And that can happen not only geopolitically, but of course, economically with what they're doing as well. And I think one of the interesting things to note about what's happening right now is that the Federal Reserve has absolutely painted itself into a corner. And I think we can see that this is something that was probably designed to occur this way. But at any rate, however it occurred, the $85 billion in stimulus that they're injecting into the economy every month right now through their QE3 and QE4 programs is going to come to an end at some point. And now that the Fed is starting to flirt with the idea of withdrawing that aid, there is absolutely no way that they can do that without taking a severe beating to the bond and equity markets. They are both going to suffer severely in the wake of the withdrawal of that stimulus. And there's really no way around that. The markets have gotten used to this idea of this constant injection of money. So there's really no way that they could perform any sort of soft landing to the economy at this point, even if that's what they wanted. The only thing that they can do is continue pumping this money in indefinitely until it just basically explodes. The bubble will have to keep inflating until it bursts. And that's that again is not a pretty picture. And it could be that type of instability that comes in the wake of the popping of the bubble that could really lead to the upending of their system, because it is in times of great economic crisis that people will revolt in multiple ways and will not necessarily go along with whatever the government tells them. It's really a question of whether the American people is ready to start questioning everything that they hear from the so-called authorities, and will start to see maybe something like the IRS scandal that's recently broken will wake at least some of the population up to just how deep the tyranny is right now.
And I think there is an increasing awareness. Fortunately, I said it's not just something one ministry. It's Alex Jones and Joyce Riley. And suddenly, then when you begin to see these things being put out by the Council on Foreign Relations, and certainly Noel Hutchings and John Loeffler, and we can go down the list of all the people, World Net Daily, So the World Net Daily is doing a wonderful, wonderful job of getting information out. And more people are just turning off television and going to the Internet to get information. And incidentally, James Corbett has his own publications. And later we'll tell you how you get his articles out of the International Forecaster, how you can get his insightful comment, because, of course, he's living over in Japan at the present time. He gives us an international flavor to what's going on. I'm not necessarily trapped in the mindset of so many foolish people in America who can't see the forest for the trees. Well, James, go right ahead.
Well, let me just pick up on another scandal that's starting to surface right at the moment, and that's just broken in the last couple of days, and this is the AP phone records scandal. So for those who don't know, the Associated Press has just released a letter that they wrote to Attorney General Eric Holder, revealing that the Justice Department has secretly collected 2 months' worth of telephone records for reporters and editors at the Associated Press, including not only their official news lines, but also the personal phone lines of several of the staffers at the AP. And I have, in the coverage I've seen so far, it hasn't necessarily linked this to one or another story that the AP was working on, but the idea is that the government was attempting to collect these records to try to ferret out some of the sources that the AP reporters were using to report on some of their stories, presumably related to White House activities. And again, this is just a monstrous breach of the First Amendment rights to freedom of the press, and just an absolute another indicator of in-your-face tyranny just off the charts that wouldn't have been acceptable in any previous era of American politics. But again, we've crossed that Rubicon so fundamentally now that unfortunately people are probably likely to take this type of scandal again in stride. But again, it just goes to show that once the government starts pressing on some of these fundamental liberties, it doesn't take long before the dam really starts to break and the water starts rushing forth. And I think that's what we're seeing now, as executive privilege and executive power has just extended to the point where the government is now openly spying on reporters to try to locate their sources for various stories so that they can ferret out government whistleblowers. And once you get to that stage of a society, unfortunately, there's not a long way down before you hit rock bottom.
So what I think is fascinating, though, is more and more of this isn't coming out. And whether this is being orchestrated or why it's happening, I don't know. In the past, we wouldn't have heard much about this. We've been trying to point out, certainly had the control over the media for 50 years, and I don't think most people really understood the degree of control that existed. But I think now even part of the media is beginning to understand they don't dare tell the truth. If they do, they're going to get into trouble with the government. I think that's a great thing.
Well, I agree. I mean, I think what we're seeing is really it has to be seen as the latter stages of this type of collapse. Not just an economic collapse, but I think a societal collapse. And in those latter stages, we really do have, as I say, the chance to really grasp the minds of the public, who are more and more willing to question what they're being told by the authorities. And the breaking of these types of scandals, again, whether or not this is being allowed to happen, because as you say, these types of scandals probably would not have been broken in times past. So what does it mean that this is coming out now? Are they trying to foment some type of rebellion, quote unquote, that they can use that to sort of further their own aims and agenda? That's a possibility. But I think at any rate, we in the alternative media have the opportunity now to reach out to people with stories like these to really expose the tyranny for what it is. And I think that this represents a great opportunity. And I don't know about yourself, but certainly with myself in my own work, I have seen over the past several years, people really opening up to the ideas that we're presenting right now. Although the information fundamentally hasn't changed, we're still quoting things like Carol Quigley's Tragedy and Hope that was written half a century ago now. But people are finally starting to understand what these people were talking about on a scale that I haven't seen before. And I think
hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is James Corbett, and he's just simply saying that basically people are beginning to see what's happening on a scale not seen before. In other words, more and more people are becoming aware of the problem, that there's a very real problem. Now, of course, I get calls all the time from people who say, look, I keep trying to tell people and they don't want to hear it. And that's true, probably. Half of the country doesn't want to hear, but 30 or 40% of the people are learning and are becoming increasingly aware of the fact that the media is controlled, that we are on the bridge and the edge of a financial cataclysmic event. And certainly all we can do is continue talking. As more and more of this is getting out over the internet and internet radio and alternative radio and radio stations, and as more and more people turn off ABC, CBS, and NBC, and they are turning off the major media, and they're going to the internet to get the information. Why, of course, there's a growing awareness. Now, most people would just as soon not know bad news. I don't want to know bad news. I wish I didn't have to know what was going on, but unfortunately, this is the burden I've had to carry for 50 years. But after 50 years, I will tell you, quite honestly, that I'm far more optimistic than I've ever been before, that there is a growing awareness that I've never seen before. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 if you have a question for James Corbett. And we're talking about what's happening financially as America moves towards the cliff, a cliff. And once we go over that cliff, ladies and gentlemen, the people who certainly have their wealth invested in paper money are going to find out what other people who've had their money invested in fiat money down through the centuries have found out. And that is that there is no incidence in all recorded history where fiat money has system has survived for any period of time. Because what happens? Well, just what's happening today. Government, to keep the things running, has to put in more and more and more money. And so what are we doing? Right now, the Fed is introducing $85 billion a month. $85 billion every single month to try to keep the system from collapsing. And they can't keep doing it indefinitely without destroying the value of our currency. And they know that. Now they're beginning to talk about cutting back. But what happens when they cut back? They tell us, oh, well, unemployment's up. Ladies and gentlemen, unemployment is falling here in the United States only because so many people are no longer looking for work. It's not that there are more jobs. In fact, when unemployment fell, if you looked at the employment figures, you find out that the unemployment fell, but there are more people who are not working. Why? Because they've just given up looking for work. What are your thoughts on that, James?
Well, absolutely right. Once again, we find that the entire system is based on those types of fundamental illusions. And again, as we say, more and more people are waking up to them. I think really the question that we have to ask ourselves is, if this is a pendulum type system where the pendulum swings from a growing awareness and passion for liberty amongst the public and a growing apathy amongst the public, if we are really basically oscillating between those two positions, then the question is, every time that pendulum swings, can they push a little bit further towards tyranny? And will the public eventually learn to accept that as the new normal? And I think that's what we've been seeing over a period of decades, not only economically, as we see the standard of living start to deteriorate rapidly in the United States and elsewhere around the globe, in the first world, as that wealth is basically offshored to the developing world. But also, I think we've seen this societally in so many different ways, from our notion of privacy, for example, that basically being completely eroded by the Facebooks and Twitters and all the other vehicles by which people willingly share their most personal information with complete strangers on the internet. And we see this happening in other ways as well, the transformation of American society so that seven-year-old boys can be basically kicked out of school for pretending to use their finger as a gun when they're playing. Apparently, that's some sort of terroristic threat that can now get children kicked out of school. Just ridiculousness that's off the charts. But again, once you are steeped into a ridiculous system for long enough, just humans being what they are, they start to accept that as the normal conditions. So it is a process of conditioning, and it really is a question of whether people can snap out of that conditioning and start to rediscover what it was that really motivated, for example, the founding fathers of the United States to rebel against the tyranny of King George. And it's much more difficult to do in an age where people don't even believe that there is a ruling class anymore. People believe that everyone's on a level playing field, or at least that's the dominant myth that we've been sold. So I think we have to identify that there certainly is a ruling class that does benefit from these types of brash moves that they're making. And once we can do that and start to put the onus on them to basically explain themselves, I think we've already started to shift that societal conversation in a way that can actually affect meaningful change. And so again, I am optimistic, but cautiously so.
Our telephone number is 1-888-24 Liberty. We have Joe calling from Arkansas. We'll get to Joe in a moment. But our telephone number is 1-888-24 Liberty, 464-295. Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We have Joe calling from Arkansas. Joe, do you have a question or comment for our guest?
I do. I have a question for Mr. Corbett, and my question concerns the so-called Marketplace Fairness Act, the Internet Sales Tax. I want to ask Mr. Corbett's opinion on this. First, what does he think are the chances of its passage in the House? And second, if it does pass, Mr. Corbett, what do you think will be the effect on the American economy of this Internet Sales Tax?
Oh, the Internet Sales Tax, all right, fine. Have any thoughts on that at all, James?
Well, unfortunately, I haven't really looked into this very much, so I'm not going to be able to put out any sort of educated opinion at this point. It is something that I'm looking into, though, so I'll have something more substantive to say on it in the future. I think at this point, from what I've seen, the smart money is on this not being able to pass at this present time, but the fact that they're even trying to bring about an idea of an internet sales tax should be chilling in and of itself. And it's really a question of, again, taking a little bit at a time from what's happening online. And we've seen this coming in a number of different ways, including the attempt by the Justice Department to basically make illegal the plans for the 3D printed gun that we've seen recently. They're trying to crack down on 3D printing and other such innovations that are happening online. So I hope at any rate people are aware of these types of intrusions, and I will do more homework on this, so I'll have something more substantive on it to say hopefully on the program next week.
James, I mean, I've read this about internet gun printing. How can you create a gun with a printer in here? That just doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, this is maybe printing is somewhat of a misnomer. It gives the wrong impression of ink being spewed onto paper, but 3D printing is a process. It's actually a type of manufacturing process, but it is so miniaturized at this point. There are literally desktop 3D printers that can be used. Basically, they use an extruded plastic. It just heats it up and then prints it to layer by layer into a 3D model of whatever it is that you've designed on your computer. And so it is an actual physical 3D object that can be manufactured. And these 3D printers are becoming to the point where they are now commercially available, widely commercially available, and the prices are dropping to the point where more and more people are getting interested in them. So some people have taken it upon themselves to start designing things like the lower receiver for AR-15s and other such gun components. And they started putting those plans online for people to download so that they can download the plans and then print them off on their 3D printers.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly our guest is a James Corbett. And before I go on, I do want to comment. There's going to be a conspiracy conference over in the San Jose area on the 1st and 2nd of June. And certainly it's going to be at the Crown Plaza Hotel in Milpitas. June 1st, June 2nd, they're bringing in some great speakers, William Still, Jim Fetzer, certainly Dr. Chu, I'm not going to be speaking. I will have a conference. We'll have a table there. A lot of people are going to be there. It's a great conference. I enjoy it every year, and I've gone for the last 10 years. Anyway, if you'd like more information, the telephone number is 925-449-6844. That's 925-449-6844. And as of tomorrow, hopefully this will all be posted on my webpage at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Well, before we go on, James, I'd like you to tell our listeners how they can get to your information on the Sydney on the International Forecaster, how they can get the information, your own personal corporate advisory report or corporate report.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for that. If people are interested in the International Forecaster, I suggest they go to the website, theinternationalforecaster.com. That's all one word, theinternationalforecaster.com. And you can find more information about the Forecaster. You can find some of the sample articles that are available there. And you can also get an introductory copy if it's your first time. You can also find out how to subscribe to the Forecaster, which comes out twice a week. It's about 40 pages of articles and information on market, on social and political issues as well. A lot of information packed into each issue, not only my editorial, but articles and information from a lot of different sources. So people can find out more at theinternationalforecaster.com. And if people are interested in my own work, you can go to corbettreport.com and you can find all of my various articles, interviews, videos, and other media that I've created over the past 7 years. That's corbettreport.com, C-O-R-B-E-T-T report.com.
Okay, fine. Well, we've got Nick calling from Washington State. Our telephone number, if you're out there, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-295. Hi, Nick. How are we doing?
Hey, I'm doing great, Dr. Stan. Thank you for taking the call. I have a question for you and for our guest. And after I ask it, then I'm going to go ahead and hang up and listen on the radio.
All right, fine. Go ahead.
Okay. The way they're going with the financial situation in America today and other parts of the world, and with what they're doing with the gun control movement in America, is do you think this could all be working towards getting us to a cashless society that we keep hearing about? That's my question. Thank you, gentlemen. I'll listen on the radio.
All right, fine. And, Coach, how would you respond to that, James? Certainly, I guess Nick calling from Washington State says that it looks like they're trying to take us into a cashless society. Of course, if you are certainly a student of the scriptures, we talk about a cashless society. Are they trying to do that thing here in America? So they take us out of money and take us into everything will be taken care of electronically?
I think that that is the long-term goal, and that is absolutely the current trend. And we can see this from all the different types of different cashless payments that are coming online and becoming more and more normalized in society right now. So I think that definitely is the long-term goal, and I think the reason for that should be obvious, that once we are in that cashless society, where literally every transaction that takes place can be monitored, tracked, logged, detailed, and databased in real time, that gives absolute 100% control to the people who are overseeing, monitoring, and administering that system, and who would have the potential at that point to literally turn people's ability to buy and sell off and on at the flick of a switch in a centralized location, and literally cut people off from all economic activity if they don't like what they are, what they're doing, or what they're saying. And that is absolutely, that should be frightening, and I hope that people understand why that is a nightmare vision of what could happen. At this point, it's still some ways off, but we're already seeing the implementation of this in places like Sweden and other places where even to ride a bus, for example, they're starting to eliminate the ability to pay with cash, and they're starting to go to electronic payments only. And I think this is what we're going to see in the long term, that more and more of this being phased out so that cash is completely demonized. And in fact, just a year or two ago, the FBI came out with the Department of Homeland Security, I think, came out with a report saying that people who pay for small items in cash might be engaging in terrorist activity and should be monitored carefully. So we're already starting to see this demonization taking place. And unfortunately, I think we all know where this is heading in the long term.
And of course, if you're coming from a Christian point of view, why are you going to be convinced that they're going to put a chip or some sort of a mark on our right hand or our forehead? Could that really happen? Well, ladies and gentlemen, of course, if you're coming from a Christian point of view, you know it's going to happen, or at least they're going to try to do that. Now, the question is, what about America, since America isn't certainly mentioned at all in prophecy? Will this simply be in Europe, or will this be in America as well, or could it be that something dramatic is going to happen to America? We're just going to have to wait and see, because I will tell you that the people who run things, what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness, I believe that they are really very, very uncertain about where we're headed as well. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, and it should be very obvious we're moving into a cashless society. And of course, if you do not go along with this, well, you're going to come under terrible persecution, and you're going to have a great deal of difficulty buying and selling, unless, of course, the whole financial system comes down. And basically, we do away then with the structure of money, and we get back to a barter system, which has happened certainly in other countries that have gone into a condition of social chaos. It's going to be fascinating to see how this plays out. And certainly, I think the decisions have already been made. They just haven't told us as yet. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, James, what do you see happening next down the line? Well, what do you see happening, for instance, over there as far as China is concerned? It sounds like China is having very real economic problems, that they certainly, other countries are not buying as much as they have in the past from China, that certainly wages are going up in China, that certainly there is a social unrest in China because some people are being laid off from their jobs. China certainly was the major producer of so many of these high labor intensity products. And now, of course, that they're so expensive, those are being produced in other other countries. And we're not getting the very, very cheap things that we did before. I remember we get our shirts for $19, and now the price is going up, and they're no longer made in China. They're being made in Malaysia and other areas. What are your thoughts on certainly on this disruption of the world economic system?
Well, I think everyone realized that the incredible growth rates in China over the past decade of 10% or even higher could not be sustained for any appreciable length of time. And so we're starting to see the attendant slowdown that comes with a general worldwide consumer slowdown, and also, as you say, such things as inflation, which starts to eat into profit margins, etc. So I think we're starting to see that. And of course, there has been an attendant slowdown in the Chinese economy. I think the only way that they could possibly maintain anything like their previous growth rates is to really start to stimulate their domestic population into starting to spend, which I think they're trying to do. They're also undergoing incredible transformations as a society right now, basically committing trillions of dollars over the next decade, or hundreds of billions at any rate, to attempt to move a sizable percentage of the rural population into urban centers. So that's going to generate all sorts of quote-unquote economic activity of construction and other things to make room for this incredible transformation that's going to occur. But of course, all of that is just being funded by the Bank of China itself, straight out of the government's coffers. So I think we're starting to see some of the real problems of the previous growth rates and trying to maintain that. And also on this side of the globe, I think people should keep their eye on what's been happening with the Japanese yen in recent weeks and even in recent days, when the JGB, the Japanese government bond futures trading, had to be halted momentarily a few days ago because they were plunging so precipitously. A huge sell-off in 10-year futures here, treasuries, just absolutely off the charts kind of collapse that's happening in the Japanese government bond market, because the Japanese yen has now floated back up above that 100 yen to the dollar rate, which is kind of a mental barrier for a lot of investors. So there's some huge problems happening with the so-called Abenomics of inflating away the yen already, and it's only been going on for a couple of months now. So I think this is part of what the future for many of the countries that are engaged in this quantitative easing will look like, and it just goes to show that printing money into infinity is just not the ultimate strategy for solving any economic problems.
Okay, fine. I certainly agree with you, and basically this is the end result of certainly of competitive fiat currencies and everybody trying to destroy the value of their currency to make their products more readily available on the international market. In other words, you get your prices down, you destroy the value of your currency. Now you can sell Japanese cars more cheaply, but what you do, of course, is destroy the value of everybody's invested in the bond market. And so many of the Japanese frugal people that they are have been putting their money into the bond market, thinking this will give them security, and they're being robbed, in other words, by destroying the value of their currency, or they're simply losing their life savings. And so the people are beginning to dump bonds and trying to go into other things. But of course, down the line, why most people are tied into money in one way or another, through bonds or through stocks, or certainly through insurance policies or through pensions, are certainly going to end up being impoverished. Well, right now we have Ren calling from Somerset, Pennsylvania. Again, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Ren, have you called before, or are you a new caller?
No, I called once or twice before.
Okay, fine. Do you have a question or comment?
A comment and a question. This kind of puzzles me why there isn't more of a effort to get rid of the Federal Reserve. That's the paymaster of the criminal globalists. But the main question I was curious about was Bob Chapman, before his promotion to glory, had a article on his website about the Vatican Bank and the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court having over $1 billion in the Vatican Bank and many others, such as the president and his family. I was wondering if that was that ever verified? Because it was on the Daily Poll website for a while, too.
Well, now, basically, is that supposedly a Bernanke, or is that the Federal Reserve System, the central bank that you're speaking of?
Well, the Vatican Bank.
The Vatican Bank, but, I mean, who has the money deposited there?
Supposedly, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, I think it's Roberts.
Oh, Roberts.
Supposedly Obama and his family and some others.
That sounds a little fishy to me, but what are your thoughts on that, James? Do you know anything at all about that Roberts would have that amount of money? I doubt that, but what are your thoughts?
I don't know about that story in particular. I'll look into it and see if there's anything I can dig up on that. It wouldn't surprise me that there's shady dealings with the Vatican Bank, and I think that's one of the unreflected parts of the recent Pope transition that we saw, was that there was some serious scandals that were starting to emerge over Vatican leaks, or whatever they called it, with the revelations about what was happening at the Vatican Bank, etc., and some of the reforms that were taking place. That's one of the neglected stories of the whole papal transition. But I don't know specifically about Justice Roberts. I'll see if there's anything in particular I can dig up, or any more information I can get on that.
Well, James, I have heard, and perhaps you could comment on it, that basically the Vatican is one of the richest banks in the world. Is there any truth to that?
It certainly seems to be. There isn't a lot of transparency so that we can assign numbers to it, but certainly the Vatican has control over vast amounts of money, and it is so non-transparent that it could be used for all sorts of things without necessarily having to be reported in stringent ways like any other bank would presumably have to report. So I think one of the big questions about the Vatican holding holdings is really what they do with it, how they handle that money. And that's always, there's always been a shroud of secrecy over that. And I think some of the recent reforms were meant to be some window dressing to try to put some transparency on that. But I wouldn't exactly hold my breath for any great revelations coming out of the Vatican Bank. But certainly there are large amounts of money that are held there and that are basically off the records and perhaps even more secretive than the famed Swiss banking system.
Okay, anything else, Ren, before we let you go?
Yeah, just one quick thing. I kept hearing before the election that the Federal Reserve mandate or charter was supposed to be up either late last year or earlier this year. Was it renewed, or what happened to that?
To the best of my knowledge, that is not the case. I think that originally when it was first formed, I can't remember the exact terms, but I think it was meant to be the charter had to be renewed every 10, 16 years, something like that. There was a set period, but I think there was an amendment passed a while ago that meant that basically the Federal Reserve will continue until its charter is discontinued. It no longer needs to be renewed. Again, I'll pin down the details on that and see what I can find, but I'm pretty sure that's the way it works now, so that, unfortunately, it's not just going to go away on its own.
Okay, well, for our listeners out there, the Federal Reserve has nothing to do with our government. It is a privately owned central bank, and it is owned certainly by the major banks, there are six of them, and of course you go and down just the line of those six banks, JP Morgan Chase, Morgan Stanley, Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, certainly Wells Fargo, and they control 69% of all of the financial assets of this country, and they control the central bank, and then you've got about 5,800 other banks, and they control the rest of the assets. You have a small group of people who have tremendous financial holdings, and they are really the ones who run our government. The government doesn't run the central bank. The central bank runs the government, and that's why we have the finest politicians in Washington, D.C. that money could buy. Hey, thanks very much for calling, Ren. Let's go to Kevin, who's calling us from Ohio. Again, our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, and go right ahead, Kevin. Go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen. God bless you for your work, Dr. Stan. I think in a thing about demonizing current Federal Reserve with interest, though, with credit cards, the birth of the credit cards in the United States, I think simply at the beginning, we accepted when they gave us a credit card, when some places like a local gas station would give you a percentage off where you didn't pay for the interest for the next fella. And today, there still should exist two ring-ups on any cash register, one for cash and one for credit, because they collect the same price at retail or everywhere things are sold. And I think that's a demonization of cash right there.
I think you're absolutely right, and it's settled little bit by little bit. It happened so gradually. We don't understand what has happened until one day we wake up and we find we're all going to have a chip in our right hand and our forehead. Any thoughts at all on that, James?
Well, it's a good point to make. Even something as simple and ubiquitous as a credit card really did transform the economy in the way that it made credit just an absolute backbone of the system and has greatly expanded the amount of consumer debt. And I think we now understand that with the amount of people drowning in the type of debt where they're using one credit card to pay off another. So it is an unfortunate chain of events that have led us here, and we have to denormalize that and understand this is not a normal way to run an economy.
Okay, fine, Kevin. Thank you so much for calling. Anything else you want to say before we let you go?
I think it is the way that they eliminate cash because they only want the credit.
I think you're absolutely right, and then they can control everything. And there will be no money at all. It will be totally dependent upon the electronic system. And they don't like you. They just cut off your name and you're starved to death. Thanks so much. Well, James, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up today's program. It's been a fascinating program. Go right ahead.
Well, it has, and I guess that's unfortunate in a way because the most fascinating talks happen when there's a great amount of crisis and instability. And unfortunately, again, that's exactly what we're seeing as the system that has been engineered to fail is starting to fail. So again, it really is the question in which way the system collapses and whether people will be ready to question and not go along with everything that the so-called authorities are telling them, or whether they will resist that in whatever way is possible. And again, there are lots of different ways to resist that, for everything from taking your money out of the big banks, the big six especially, that dominate the American banking system, to stopping to paying into that system, stopping the Dow Jones S&P 500 merry-go-round of feeding your money into the beast that is creating the problems, and starting to use that money to help boost, hopefully, the local economy around you and other people that you can support who are helping to spread this message. And on a further note to Ren, who was calling about the Federal Reserve Act and whether it's going to expire, I should note that on federalreserve.gov, if you go to the frequently asked questions part of that website, they have the question, is the Federal Reserve Act going to expire? And the Federal Reserve itself answers by saying that there is no expiration date on the, or repeal date on the act itself, that it will continue until it is amended, repealed, or altered by Congress. So unfortunately, we are going to be stuck with the Federal Reserve until someone can finally break that down that wall, like Ron Paul was attempting to do during his time in office. And there's no better time than the present to educate the public about the Federal Reserve as we're approaching the 100th anniversary of the creation of this monster. So let's get into that topic in more depth in the coming weeks and see if we can really explore what's behind this system and what really created it.
All right, fine. Well, why don't we do that next week then? Sounds like a very important issue. Basically, Chris, my job is to educate the public as best we can, and we do have listeners, you can tell, from all across the country tuning into Radio Liberty, and we want them to get educated so they can educate others, and it's sort of a chain reaction. We feel we're very, very fortunate to have a voice in a time like this, especially an economic time when the whole House of Cards is going to be coming down. There's going to be tremendous suffering. I'm sure we will feel it here. What about over in Japan? Do you think they'll be fairly stable, or what are your thoughts?
Unfortunately, I cannot see a way out for Japan that will be pretty at this point. I think that the idea is to try to get people out of the Japanese government bonds and into the equity market, and they're doing a good job of that, I suppose, at the moment. But what this means is that they're introducing a lot of instability to the economy, and a lot of people who are currently retired or retiring are going to find that their bonds are not as valuable as they had hoped they would be.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and James was just saying that in Japan, probably there are going to be a lot of people who, of course, are in the stock markets and bonds, who are going to come in for a rude awakening when the House of Cards in Japan comes down, just as the House of Cards is coming down in the United States. James, God bless you. Thanks very much for being with us, and we'll look forward to talking to you next week at the same time.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to it myself.